This week in KMA Land, Shen water warning lifted. Shenandoah Council sets Legacy 3 Theater repairs. Ceremony welcomes Remembering Our Fallen to Shenandoah. Page County Board renews Essex law enforcement contract. Montgomery County Board hears storm damage update. I'm Mike Peterson. For the first time in about a year and a half, Shenandoah is no longer under water restrictions. By unanimous vote Tuesday night, the Shenandoah City Council repealed the Stage 2 water conservation measures enacted back in April. The council's action lifted the water warning, allowing residents to once again water their lawns, wash cars, fill swimming pools, and practice other water-related activities prohibited under Chapter 93 of the city's Water Conservation Ordinance. Shenandoah officials first issued water restrictions in October 2024. In an interview airing Wednesday morning on KMA's Morning Line program, Shenandoah Mayor Roger McQueen says the decision to repeal Stage 2 follows constant monitoring of the city's water wells this past month.
We actually had two wells down a week ago for service and maintenance. We watched what they did. You know, we were lucky enough to catch some rains. And so right now we're only one well down for cleaning. So that means we've got 10 of them. We've saw the level jump up to about 81 inches. We can contribute that to the rains, you know, and keeping the river up, recharging the soil.
McQueen says the main concern was that the city would lift the water warning too soon, only to impose restrictions due to falling water levels.
Between Tim Martin, the water superintendent, myself, and city administrator, we decided that, at this level, Tim's very confident that if the citizens will continue to, just do their best to conserve. There's no restrictions, but we're just asking them to be conscious about their water use, so we don't have to go back into a stage one or stage two, that we could lift all these.
However, McQueen says the monsoon-like rains that flooded city streets during the June 11 severe storm had no bearing on the decision to lift water restrictions. With July and August still ahead, the mayor urges voluntary conservation as the city is still recovering from the effects of a long-term drought.
You know, the drought's not over. Talking to some guys the other day, actually we are like a year behind. In 4 years, we have lost a whole year of rain. So, you put that in perspective, that's how dry we really are in the big picture. So.
And City Water Superintendent Tim Martin urges residents with questions about water issues to call his office at 712-246-3372. You can hear the full interview with Roger McQueen on KMA's Morning Line program on our Morning Line page. Well, Shenandoah officials are addressing recent damage to a downtown building's exterior. By unanimous vote Tuesday evening, the Shenandoah City Council approved an estimate for the Legacy 3 Theater's building facade EFAS removal and replacement from all-purpose construction for $67,250. Council members also authorized the city clerk to issue the required 25% down for materials and rescheduling work. EFAS stands for Exterior Installation and Finish System, otherwise known as synthetic stucco. Well, speaking once again on that Morning Line program, Shenandoah Mayor Roger McQueen says moisture loosened portions of the building's exterior, causing pieces to fall to the sidewalk below.
Moisture got behind it, and 2 weeks ago, I believe, a big part of it fell off. So, All Purpose is the same company that's doing our wastewater plant. I've got complete confidence in them. They seem to know exactly, how they're going to get this fixed. And so I was glad that, the council voted tonight to move ahead with this.
Shenandoah City Administrator A.J. Lyman says lack of maintenance may have also played a role in the damage.
The material that was on there lasted a good 25 plus years. I think part of it was that there was not much in the way of maintenance. I've also heard that whatever the material that they used before was more for more southern climates, and the material that they use today is a little bit hardier. And we'll discuss what a maintenance program looks like going forward.
Though the repair timeline is unknown, Lyman hopes it's as soon as possible.
EFAS is like a super proprietary, you gotta take a month-long training thing, so finding a contractor that is able to work with it was kind of difficult. All Purpose luckily has a couple of contractors they work with. I'm hopeful to get an updated schedule that I'll share with council and everybody as quick as possible. They do know that time's of the essence with the damage that is currently there and the potential for more stuff to come down, so they know.
Barricades currently surround the sidewalk below the damaged exterior as a safety precaution. Music and moving messages honor the arrival of a special exhibit in Shenandoah this week.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
Country music artist and retired U.S. Air Force Senior Master Sergeant Jimmy Weber with a stirring rendition of the national anthem, opening Wednesday evening's ceremony welcoming Remembering Our Fallen to Shenandoah. Thousands of pictures honoring the service men and women who lost their lives in the War on Terror are featured on the 10-foot-high towers erected in the Shenandoah Veterans Museum and KMA parking lot. Included in the pictures are those of KMA land soldiers who died between the 9/11 attacks in 2001 and August 2021. Gold Star families of the fallen were recognized during the ceremony, including that of Army Private First Class Brandon Buttry of Shenandoah, who was killed in 2012 and stationed in Afghanistan with the U.S. Army. Shenandoah First Baptist Church Pastor Don Buttry, Brandon's father, took the opportunity to thank those he didn't thank on that day almost 14 years ago when his son's body arrived at Shenandoah Municipal Airport.
And it'd been a lonely 10 days, 11 days, trying to figure out how life would go on. But rather being it than being alone, as we pulled up, I could not count the number of Freedom Riders, the number of Patriot Guards, the number of motorcycle riders from the Vietnam era that were there to welcome my son home. I'd like to take this time to thank all the riders that rode today, but also all those who were there 13 years ago.
In remembering his son and others included in the display, Buttry recalled the words of General George Patton, who said not to mourn fallen soldiers, but instead remember their lives and their passions.
Since Brandon was 5, he wanted to be in the Army. He loved the Army. And then in 2001, when he saw those towers come down, he had a drive to join, to serve, and he got to do that. And he paid the ultimate sacrifice, but it was to keep the freedoms for not just America, but for other countries, but also to make sure that nobody messes with the United States of America and walks away laughing.
Also recognized was the family of Army Specialist James C. Kearney III of Emerson, who died while in combat in Afghanistan in November 2004. Serving as the ceremony's keynote speaker, Kearney's father Jim recalled why his son entered the armed forces.
James made a choice. We don't know how long our son's daughter's spouse may be with us. He made a choice to help others, help defend the country. If he hadn't, he would have been taken away from us anyway, probably the same day. Could have been a car accident, drunk driver, ended up being just a statistic. Or an industrial accident where he worked. But he chose to give his life for others.
Kearney says assisting other Gold Star families helped him cope with his son's passing. Recalling how his faith has helped him the past 22 years, Kearney gave this advice to those who are also grieving.
Stay open to the Spirit. I don't care what faith you are, what religion. We're all based off the one Creator. Stay open to that Spirit.
Other Gold Star families honored, including those of Marine Corporal Jared R. Maher of Imogene, Army Sergeant Brent M. Maher of Council Bluffs, Army Sergeant First Class J. Glick of Clarinda, and Army Private Kenneth A. Nally of Hamburg. About 30 volunteers worked Wednesday morning to erect the display. Now, Remembering Our Fallen is open today, Saturday from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. The Page County Sheriff's Office will continue providing police coverage for Essex for another year. At its regular meeting late Tuesday afternoon, the Page County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved renewing the 28E agreement with the City of Essex, designating the Sheriff's Office as the community's state-required law enforcement agency. The board initially entered into the contract with Essex in January 2024 after the City of Shenandoah ended a similar agreement with Essex that had been in place since 2012. Page County Sheriff Charles McCullough tells KMA News much of the contract is set to remain the same for fiscal year 2027, including the hourly rate of $60 to $8.24 charged to the city.
We do all of the criminal code except for like their city enforcement codes and stuff like that. We do not do that, but other than that, we do all their law enforcement for them.
Over the past year, McCullough says his deputies have spent roughly 10 to 20 hours a week in their capacity as the community's official law enforcement agency. The sheriff says they consider a number of factors when determining the hourly rate.
We've went back through and looked at how much vehicles cost, what gas prices are, raises, how much labor is costing us to supply law enforcement. And at that point, we make a fair deal or a fair price with the City of Essex so that it's not completely outrageous.
Well, the rate did not change for fiscal 27. McCullough says the agreement continues into fiscal year 2028. They might have to consider an increase.
We're going to have to make an adjustment with, obviously, gas prices up as high as they are. We budgeted for that early enough last year that it really didn't hurt us too bad, but it's something to start thinking about. Plus, you know, everybody got raises last year, and you know, we probably need to go ahead and start putting that into effect too.
Overall, McCullough says the past 2.5 years have gone smoothly, providing the necessary law enforcement coverage. Before 2024, of course, the county had not provided police coverage for Essex since 1992. Montgomery County residents impacted by this spring's severe storms face challenges in securing disaster aid. Earlier this month, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds issued a disaster proclamation for Montgomery and 10 other counties affected by severe weather outbreaks in May and June. Included in the May 15 storm with straight-line winds hammering Red Oak and Stanton, and the June 11th outbreak spawning tornadoes, high winds, and hail, causing damage from Stanton east through Adams County. Montgomery County Emergency Management Coordinator Brian Hammond told the county's Board of Supervisors Tuesday at least 90 points of damage were identified.
For the most part, residential structures all affected to minor damage, siding, roofs, things like that, from trees down. Big losses to the ag sector, a lot of buildings destroyed, heavily damaged. Of course, you know, anytime there's wind, tree damage, there's going to be issues. So not uncommon for this time of year, just kind of compounded all at once, it seems like.
Hammond says the disaster declaration activated the Iowa Individual Assistance Grant Program, which provides grants up to $7,000 for households with incomes up to 200% of the federal poverty level. He says the problem is that few residents meet the program's financial threshold. Funding agreements have been reached for surrounding communities to contribute to Red Oak's emergency medical services. At its regular meeting Monday evening, the Red Oak City Council unanimously approved 28E agreements with the cities of Stanton, Villisca, Elliott, Emerson, and Grant, with each community contributing an annual monetary amount of over the next 2 years toward the Red Oak Fire Department's Advanced Life Support, or ALS, ambulance services. Discussions over possible funding agreements have been ongoing since November of last year, when Red Oak City Administrator Lisa Cotter indicated that more than 10% of the agency's EMS calls originated outside the Red Oak Fire Department's response area, while the Red Oak Rural Fire Protection Association, which covers various townships outside city limits, contributes $100,000 a year. Cotter says other communities the agency responds to, such as Villisca, Stanton, Elliott, and Grant in Montgomery County, and Emerson and Mills County, do not currently contribute monetarily to Red Oak's EMS services. Cotter says agreements have been reached with the majority of the surrounding communities.
We kind of went back and forth through that process. Three of the city councils have approved them. There was one minor language request change from Villisca, which was something about, we talked about how we dispatch, and they just wanted one little tweak. So that was fine. with me, and Bree and I discussed it because Bree's the city attorney for both Emerson and Villisca.
Under the agreement, the city of Villisca contributes $10,000 per year. Stanton will chip in $7,141, and Elliott and Grant will contribute $1,733 and $356, respectively. Connor says there'll be some ongoing discussions with the city of Emerson on a guaranteed maximum increase in the contribution. While initial talks were a 200% max increase over 2 years, Connor says Emerson then asked for a 100% max increase.
They came back with, they wanted it to be 100%, and I said no. They're the ones that are outside of Montgomery County. Nobody else asked for that. So they can go with Malvern if they want to. I haven't gotten a response. So my request would be that you approve it, and then you'll see in the resolution that there, if there's no substantial change, and they would come back with some minor language that the mayor and Carrie can still sign it, as long as we're not substantially changing it.
With individual patients receiving services will continue to be billed directly by the City of Red Oak in accordance with its established EMS billing policies or fee schedules, the agreements are expected to generate an additional $22,925 annually. Red Oak Councilwoman Sharon Bradley says she feels the agreements are a good short-term solution for funding regional EMS services.
It's been going on for over a year, and I think that with all the meetings, I think you finally got them to think, well, this is really important to them to have this service for their communities, and they need to help pay for it. So I would motion to approve this resolution.
City officials note the 28E agreements are designed to provide short-term financial support while local governments continue discussions on an EMS essential services funding referendum. Demolition of a longtime nuisance in Rockport is a step closer following a public meeting Wednesday night. At a special meeting, the Rockport Board of Aldermen held a public hearing on the proposed demolition of the former Rockport Market on Main Street. During the hearing, Rockport Mayor J.R. Cheney tells KMA News city officials gave their case for tearing down the structure, which has been an eyesore in the community for years.
We had a building inspector, Adam Stanton, there, and he gave a report of the condition of the building, you know, the deterioration, his recommendations, and then we gave a legal defense on why we are wanting to demo the building, because it's dangerous and it's starting to have problems in multiple spots. So we passed judgment after the public hearing to start the demolition process.
Cheney says the city is sending notice to the building's owner, who lives in the state of Florida, of the intent to demolish the building.
The paperwork has been mailed to the gentleman in Florida who owns the building, and he'll have 30 days to reply. If not, this next meeting we will open the bids to start the demolition process.
But Cheney says the building's owner was not present at the hearing and doubts whether he'll respond to the city's communications. Once bids are open and a contractor selected, Cheney expects the city to move fast on demolishing the structure. He hopes the building is torn down by Christmas. However, the mayor adds the Florida resident will still own the empty lot, meaning the city can't do anything with it following demolition. It'll be a few more weeks before a decision is made on a former Glenwood police officer's reimbursement plan to the city for the training and wages he received while attending the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. By a 3-1 vote Tuesday evening, the Glenwood City Council approved tabling the matter until its July 14th meeting. Following a discussion with Zachary Chase, who had signed the reimbursement agreement when he was hired by Glenwood Police in January 2023. Under the contract, Chase agreed to reimburse the city for all or part of the expenses associated with his training and education at the academy, in addition to the wages earned during the training period, should he leave the department within 4 years of hiring. Now, Chase resigned from Glenwood Police in September 2024 after accepting a position with the Council Bluffs Police Department. The council initially broached the topic at a June 9th meeting, but tabled action to get further advice from the city attorney. Glenwood Mayor Angie Winquist says the city has a couple of options.
Another option was to require you to pay the full amount in the full balance in full, rather the loan balance in full. An option B for you would be to pay the current shortfall. You're short from not paying those first 2 years, $6,650, and get that paid as soon as possible, and then do your continued $350 a month.
Chase then asked that the topic be pushed to the council's next meeting to receive input from his attorney on the options presented. Councilmember Donnie Cates was the lone dissenting vote to table the matter.
Well, I'm going to just reiterate like I did last time, it was a contract you signed that you agreed to. You understood that. And now we're here. So I guess I just don't understand, you know, speaking to an attorney.
Chase previously gave a proposal to the city that would have lowered his monthly payment by $100, but at the June 9th meeting indicated he was willing to continue making $350 monthly payments. At that meeting, Winquist says Chase left Glenwood Police with a balance of over $20,000 owed to the city, but as of that meeting, he'd made only two $350 payments. Mills County officials say a moratorium on data centers in the county likely isn't needed due to current regulations on the books. At its regular meeting Tuesday morning, the Mills County Board of Supervisors discussed a possible moratorium on data centers during the new business section of the agenda with planning and zoning consultant Matt Wyatt. Supervisors Chair Richard Crouch says he's had several residents reach out about placing a temporary moratorium on future data center development. The topic has become frequent at area county board and city council meetings. While counties such as Ringgold and Union have implemented temporary moratoriums, the Council Bluffs City Council also recently denied a request for a one-year moratorium on data center development. But Wyant says Mills County already has tougher restrictions since data centers are not currently listed land use under the county's zoning ordinances.
So a person or a company came in and wanted to site a data center in rural Mills County. More than likely, they're going to start with Mark Norman, economic development, right? He's going to connect them. They're going to have to come up to the Board of Supervisors with a proposal or request to add data centers into as a listed land use ordinance.
He says if the supervisors wanted to pursue adding data centers as a listed land use, it would then go before the Planning and Zoning Commission to come up with language in the code and recommendations before any permits could be issued. He notes the odds of a data center being located in a rural area are lower due to the amount of infrastructure required for development.
To see a data center get sited rurally, I think it's a pretty far stretch. Yeah, a lot of water, water treatment after that. The power in the area. It's another thing, you have to have the transmission lines to get the power to them. So all of those things take years to build out or come to fruition.
Wyant says the one area where the county could see some development is in the northwest corner near the county line, which companies could seek annexation to the city of Council Bluffs. The board could symbolically place a moratorium on data centers despite the current restrictions. Wyant says that moratorium would require a time limit and include some directions, such as developing specific regulations to justify the temporary ban. Clarinda officials have backed a number of electrical repairs slated for the city's water plant. At its regular meeting Wednesday evening, the Clarinda City Council accepted a bid from HOA Solutions of just over $233,000 to conduct the needed electrical repairs. The bid, one of two received by the city for the project, and the other coming from Automatic Systems at roughly $310,000. Clarinda City Manager Gary McLarnon tells KMA News the repairs follow electrical issues at the plant last year.
There for a while, there were some electronic issues that caused us not to be able to pump water for a while. And, you know, we had a company come in. They finally got things running, but they told us that a lot of our equipment, electronics boards especially, were obsolete. So we decided to go ahead and get some proposals for repairing those items.
In September last year, Clarinda and Southwest Regional Water customers were under boil advisories for over 2 weeks, initially due to turbidity issues caused by a larger-than-normal algae bloom along the city's water source, the Nodaway River, before electrical problems impacting the plant's pumps and major water main breaks prevented the city from filling its towers. Now, McLaren says many of the upgrades entail the array of control panels at the facility.
It also entails a new SCADA system, you know, UPS communications boards, programmable logic controllers, VPN appliance, Ethernet switch. I mean, there's a lot to this, but it would actually, after the 20 years, which is the age of the water plant, we need some upgrades.
And McLarnon says the upgrades are expected to be completed later this fall. He says funding for the repairs will come out of the capital expenditures portion of the city's water utility budget. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land is a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.